I'm Jim Santos, and this is Bigger, Better World from International Living. In this podcast series, we introduce you to a bigger world full of communities that are safe, welcoming, beautiful, and largely undiscovered. A better world, a friendly, warm, great value world where you can live richer, travel more, invest for profit, and enjoy a better life. So let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bigger, Better World. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the country that took the number one spot in the International Living 2023 Global Retirement Index, Portugal. Today, however, we won't be talking to retirees. As we are discovering on Bigger, Better World, living overseas is becoming an option for people in a variety of demographics. Our guest is International Living writer Jen Whitman, who relocated along with her husband and teenage son to Verdizela, Portugal, just across the bridge from Lisbon. We'll be discussing her article in the Exploration section of the October 2022 edition of International Living magazine entitled New Beginnings and a Slower Family Life in Lisbon. Jen, thanks for joining us and welcome to Bigger, Better World.
Thanks for having me.
Jen, I found your article really interesting, not just because Portugal is such a hot topic now, but I think because rather than being a retiree, you're talking about someone who moved their whole family during the prime of their career to another country. Mm-hmm. Now, in your article, it sounded like March of 2020, the pandemic's just getting underway and things weren't really going that well for you. Can you tell us a little bit about what was going on and how that led you to making that decision to move your family to Portugal?
Yes. So March 2020, very sadly, my mom passed away. And that was a week before the pandemic was declared. So it seemed like
sorry to hear that.
Thank you. So many things were happening all at once, right? I've just lost the, crucial figure in my life. And we were having to travel across the country for the arrangements and everything. And we get back to California and the pandemic is just full on by this point. So We were like, well, we can do anything with our lives now. We've lived overseas before and we came back for family the first time. And so now that my mom was gone, it was like, okay, well, there's nothing really tethering us to America, because at the time, we had the pandemic, the George Floyd incident happened, the divisions were just getting greater between everybody. And it didn't feel safe. The cost of living in California had skyrocketed. So all of these things were kind of happening at the same time. Like nothing in our daily lives really changed in terms of, work was fine. School was fine. We were actually already homeschooling at that point. So we didn't have that big issue a lot of families face where all of a sudden their child was at home with them. So we were kind of, this was old hat. But we just saw it as an opportunity to kind of reinvent our lives, because we just had a new sense of freedom or nothing really keeping us in the country.
So you and your husband both were working jobs that you could work from home, so you had portable incomes?
Yes. So we both work for ourselves. We have our own companies. And so we have that flexibility, and we always have, which has been lovely.
That's huge.
Yeah, it was really significant in that we didn't feel any pressure to live in any particular place. Like we really could choose anywhere in the world.
But at that time, though, it must have been very difficult to make plans, make arrangements when you never really knew from day to day what kind of travel restriction might pop up.
Yeah, especially in those early days, no one knew really what was going on, right? It seemed like things were changing so quickly, but you didn't really know. And actually, when we started looking into visas and where we wanted to live, we had already lived in Italy. And our real intention was to move to Italy initially. And then we found out that they weren't even accepting visas from Americans. And that country was on just a full lockdown at that point early on in the pandemic.
Yeah, I remember they were hit pretty hard early. They just shut down completely.
Yeah, they were sort of, it felt like a ground zero for Europe, in terms of COVID. And so they shut down very quickly and we just could not get in. So then when we were looking for other countries that we could move to and we found Portugal, even that process of applying for a visa was different than it would have been pre-pandemic, because we couldn't get over there we couldn't actually travel or enter to get the things done that are required, like opening up a bank account and getting this NIF number, your tax number, and things that you're supposed to be able to do to in order to apply for a visa. So kind of the rules had changed. Things were quite different at that point because of the pandemic.
What was it that led you to choose Portugal? Was it just availability, or had you had experience with Portugal before? Or an interest in?
No, we moved here sight unseen, like a couple of crazy people. But what it was availability. So after, you know, the door was kind of closed on Italy for that period of time, we did some research and learned that Croatia was offering Americans visas and Portugal. And we just so happened to have a very close family friend who had lived in Portugal before. He had actually written some of the Portugal Lonely Planet guides. And so he knew a ton about Portugal. And he was actually also from our home state, which is Indiana. So he had lived in Indiana. He had lived in Los Angeles when we lived in Los Angeles. And so he knew all of our life experiences, and he knew enough about us to know that we would love Portugal. So he kind of sold us on it. He said, you guys are just going to love it there. You're going to be happy. It's very easy to move there compared to Italy. So when we moved to Italy 20 some years ago, nobody really spoke English, and it, you know, until you got really good at your Italian, it was very hard to connect with the community. Whereas now, you know, you come to Portugal and it's such a high level of English speakers. It's very hard to learn Portuguese in some of the cities because people will just speak to you in English. So he was kind of selling us on that. It'll be a very easy move. The weather's more similar to California, like we love. And, you know, you love the food and all this stuff. And we were like, sounds great.
So then you started immediately making the arrangements to get to Portugal.
Yes. So then we found some expat Facebook groups that really taught us what you needed to do to get to Portugal, to get the visa and everything. So we started doing our research on that. And we just figured out the other day that from the minute we decided we were moving to Portugal to getting here was only 6 months. So in that time,
wow, that's pretty good.
That's really fast.
During a pandemic too. That's pretty
good. It was a pandemic, and that was an election year too. And so, you know, it was just, everything was chaotic. We actually turned in our application in that little window of time where we had all voted, but nobody knew who the president was quite yet. And so that was a really interesting period of time to be, you know, sort of submitting these visas to leave your country. It felt like a good time to do that, actually.
Yeah. I noticed in the article you did something that we firmly believe in, and this may have helped speed things up. You used a local attorney to help you with all of the paperwork.
Yes. That was the single best decision we've made. And not only for the visa application, but for what we've encountered here once we got here, just in terms of, you know, dealing with the bureaucracy, having somebody who can translate for you. Because what's very interesting is that so many people speak English, but it seems like when you go into the government offices, nobody speaks English. So it can be kind of challenging to get those big tasks done with the government when you don't have a translator with you.
Right. And I know from our experience in Ecuador that legal documents in Ecuador were only legal if they were in Spanish.
Right.
So if you had an English contract with someone you're renting from, and there's a problem, you really have no recourse, because unless it's in Spanish and been notarized, it's not considered a legal document. I think that's the best move that someone can make, is get somebody local that you can trust. Our attorney became more of a friend after 6 years in Ecuador than a professional relationship.
We're having that same experience here. Our attorney treats us like family and was so welcoming, and the entire firm was welcoming. It felt like we already had friends by the time we got here.
So you arrived in March of 2021, about a year after you first decided to make a move?
Well, so we didn't decide to make a move until late October, the first week of November. But yeah, it was a year from when, like, kind of chaos began until we got here.
Now, notice in the article you talk about Facebook a lot being a big help to you. Was that your inspiration to start your own Facebook page to help people in California who might be considering moving to Portugal?
Yes, because something that was really interesting to me and kind of humorous is, you know, California is such a different state than a lot of what's going on in the rest of America. So when Californians would ask questions in some of the other groups, they would get a lot of resistance and anger because, you know, California is one of the world's largest economies. And so everything is scaled up, your income, right, and also your expenses, which I think people don't realize that the expenses are also scaled up. So when some people would post in these groups, like, "Can I live in Portugal on a budget of $5,000 a month?" people would get really annoyed by that and yell at them, you know. And I was just seeing people kind of get harassed in all of these other Facebook groups if they were from California. And Californians have this, you know, very strong connection to Mexican food and very strong connection, right, to nature and everything. Not to say that they don't in other states, but sometimes the kind of questions that a Californian might ask would be deemed very silly or even elitist or something in these other groups. And so I kind of created a group after in one thread in some other group, it devolved to a point where people were just attacking this poor person. And the rest of us from California, we're just kind of saying, we kind of need our own group so we can ask our questions in sort of a safe space where people would get it, you know, because in California, an income of $5,000 a month isn't even enough. That's below poverty line. So people don't understand, like, there's just this disparity going on in California where we appear, you know, we can appear rich to the rest of the world and are, right? But in California, a lot of people struggle at that amount. So that's why the question is, like, can I afford to live in Portugal at this amount? Because they don't know any differently. You know, so that was really the impetus. Nobody else was coming forward to create this magical Californian group. So I did. So I was just like, okay, yeah, we need a place. I've created other groups before for my businesses and stuff. So I felt very comfortable with it. So I just created a group for Californians. And now I've extended it to people who love Californians too. They can be from other states. It's just that they cannot bash Californians for what people might think are silly questions, but they're just part of the Californian culture is all it is.
Right. A safe space for
I know, poor Californians, which nobody thinks are poor Californians, but yes.
Well, you know, every state really has its own kind of personality and feature. And California, like I say, is so large, has such a large economy. It's really almost a country in itself.
It really is. And it really could be. Because, I mean, the last thing I heard, it was either the fourth or fifth largest economy in the world. And it might, I'm not sure of it, but it might be a larger economy than Portugal. So it's just a different, you know, it's just a different life there.
Now, something kind of unique about your situation, I mean, you were fully into this move, your husband's fully into this move, you've got your portable incomes and you're all set, but you also moved with a 12-year-old.
Yes.
I assume now he's at least 13.
14.
Maybe 14.
14 now.
Yeah. Now that's, you know, from personal experience and from my own children, I know that that is a extremely difficult age under normal circumstances. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious how he's adjusting to life in Portugal.
He is adjusting really well, actually. And the reason why, and this is kind of the beauty of all the Facebook groups, because when we moved to Italy in the early 2000s, this did not exist. This kind of resource did not exist on Facebook. So that Facebook, I don't think, existed then.
A lot of things didn't.
And so we were able to connect with families who were already moved or who had already moved to Portugal or who were about to move to Portugal at the same time we were. And we were able to get our kids connected in advance of our moves. And that gave our son something to look forward to. So he wanted to finally meet these children he'd been playing with online in person. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of made the transition much easier to utilize, you know, the social network of these Facebook groups. That was great. And then the weather here was good. And so he is homesick. He does miss his best friends from California and everything. But he transitioned really easily here. And he loves the food so much and the friendliness of the people that he's very happy here.
And are you still homeschooling him or have you found a school for him in Lisbon?
We found a school. So we started a school in Lisbon and then we now live across the bridge about 35 minutes from Lisbon. So we found a local Portuguese, we're at a private school actually here that does a double track of a British curriculum and a Portuguese curriculum, just to kind of give him more opportunities when he's ready to go out into the world. So we are at a local school that's about 4 minutes down the street from us. It's lovely.
So he is learning some Portuguese as well.
Oh, yes. Most of his classes, I think probably 95% of his day is him learning in Portuguese, which is challenging, especially when you're coming in at that age, you know, 13, 14. It's harder to learn a language then than if you're 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah, it's no easy task when you're 60 or 65.
No, it's much harder for us than for him.
As you say, you don't actually live in Lisbon, but that's a pretty big city. It's something like 550,000 people in the downtown area and as many as 3 million in the urban area, which I assume is still includes the region that you're in. Was any difficulty finding places to live or, you know, your day-to-day life, your shopping, your utilities, things like that? How difficult was that to set up?
When we first moved to Lisbon, it was easy because of the pandemic shutdowns. It was very easy to find a place to live because there were all these people who were used to renting out their place to tourists who there were no tourists coming in. So at that point, it felt very easy. And we really lucked out because we got in a great neighborhood with all this beautiful, it's a historic neighborhood, lots of architecture. And it had this amazing river view. And what we found out is we would never have been able to afford this apartment if we were trying to rent it now. But because of the pandemic and they just needed to fill the apartment, we were able to get it at a very affordable rate for us. But once that lease expired and now the tourists were back, it was extraordinarily hard to find an apartment to rent or anything to buy in Lisbon because we kind of exited our lease during the peak of the housing crisis here. So right now, Portugal is experiencing a housing crisis in the most popular areas. So, you know, the Lisbon, the Algarve, Porto, and Setúbal, which is like the area we live in now that's across the bridge. It's just a supply and demand issue. There's just so many people coming over that the housing prices really increased. We were experiencing just trying to find a rental in Lisbon almost the same way it felt like having to buy property in or even rent property in California. It was just very competitive. Things were listed and within 10 minutes they were rented. People were bidding over the asking price or the rental price. So we found it quite hard. And in fact, we got pushed out of Lisbon because of that. And then we ended up buying a house across the bridge in a more affordable area.
So that's more of a suburb of Lisbon.
Yeah, it really is.
Did you purposely look for a larger city? I mean, Lisbon's the largest city in the country, a very old city too. It's one of the oldest in the world. And I think I read it was the second oldest capital city in the world. Was that city life that you were looking for?
Yes, for me especially, my husband and my son know they love living in the suburb and they love living in a little quiet house. For me, I definitely wanted to live in a city. But the reason we chose Lisbon is because we weren't familiar with the country at all. We just felt that would be a great landing spot because we knew it had the most services available to it in terms of hospitals and international schools. At the time, that's what we were initially looking at. Just restaurants and things like that. So we thought, okay, this would be a good way to get to know the country, is kind of make our landing point Lisbon and then exploring the rest of the country from there. And then over time, we built such a great community in Lisbon. We didn't want to move anywhere too far away from Lisbon because we've had such an easy and wonderful time making friends here.
In a city that large, also, I imagine there is plenty of hospitals and clinics and things of that nature.
Yes.
And I would guess that compared to California, your healthcare costs probably dropped quite a bit.
Oh, I mean, to us, we feel like they plummeted. We were paying something like $715 a month with, you know, no pre-existing conditions and things like that in California. Mm-hmm. And now it's called premium insurance because when you come over here as an immigrant, you have to first be insured with private healthcare. And then you will eventually be able to use the public healthcare system. But because it's so affordable for an American to have the private healthcare here, we just use the private healthcare systems so that we don't put any extra stress on the public healthcare system. But our healthcare here dropped down to $200 a month for the family. So from 715 to 200, it's quite the savings.
Another big savings that expats often find is the public transportation systems in other countries tend to be much better than they're used to and much more affordable. Mm-hmm. But I think I saw in the article that you also have your local driver's licenses. And so I assume you have a car now as well.
Yes, we have a car, but I'm still terrified to drive. My husband drives us everywhere. So eventually I'm going to learn. It's a roundabout situation. That's what I've just got to get over that.
Oh, yeah.
That part. But yes, we want to just really fully immigrate over here and become, you know, just everything, get the license, get all of the things that, because we're on a track for citizenship here and very excited to be part of the culture and the community.
Okay. Well, if you're looking at citizenship, then you're not really considering a move elsewhere in Europe.
Right. Not at this time. And not, I mean, you never know what the future will bring, but we're here to raise our son in Portugal and to become citizens here. And our vision is a long-term vision of it. The tricky thing that we have started to learn and the thing we're going to have to look into, you know, after we become citizens and before, there's a special tax scheme here for foreigners who are immigrating to Portugal. And that covers us for 10 years. And it gives us a bit of a discount on our taxes, because I don't think everybody realizes that when you move from America, you are being taxed in America and you're being taxed in whatever country you reside in. So versus, you know, I think it's only one of three countries in the whole world that taxes based on citizenship and not on residency. So there's some things that go on when you start to get in the retirement phase with your retirement funds that it may or may not make sense to stay in Portugal. It really depends on how they change laws or what the laws are at the end of this 10 years after we're out of the program that they have here for foreigners.
Well, with the citizenship in Portugal and a Portuguese passport, that makes travel around the EU countries much, much easier.
Oh, yes.
So if you do need to look into something else, at least you'll have the freedom to be able to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the benefits and one of the things people do look at when they are considering relocating to Portugal and becoming a resident is that it does open up the entire EU to you.
Now, have you had a chance now that the pandemic has been slowly winding down to do any more travel around Portugal?
Yes. We've traveled around Portugal. We've traveled around the EU. That's been a really fun, you know, benefit of moving here is that, you know, within an hour or two, you can be in a different culture. And with, you know, 2 to 4 hours, you can be all over Portugal. It's from top to bottom. I don't even think it might be like 5 to 6 hours. Tops. So you can really get a sense of the country when you're here.
The title of the article that we're talking about here is New Beginnings and a Slower Family Life in Lisbon. What is that slower family life like? What's your like day-to-day routine now?
Well, the day-to-day routine hasn't changed in terms of, you know, like you said, we're still working and we're raising a child. So we've got the work. Mm-hmm. School grind, you know, that's kind of not changed since we moved. But there is just something about the pace here. You know, it's not rushed. It's not go, go, go. You learn very quickly. You cannot be on American time in Portugal. you have to.
In most foreign countries.
Right, right. Yeah. You are bound to their system of time. And so what's great about that is it's much more relaxed. So, you know, where we might have a 20-minute lunch, we have a 2-hour lunch now. You know, we linger, we take mm-hmm. time, we don't rush from place to place. We don't insist everything get done right away because you learn everything's not going to get done right away. So it forces you to just relax, trust that everything's going to work out fine. Everything's going to happen as needed. It just doesn't have to be rushed and you don't have to hustle. So that's what it feels like. Like, it's just really relaxing to be here.
Yeah, we learned pretty quickly living in Ecuador that when someone tells you they can do something mañana, it doesn't necessarily mean tomorrow. It just means not today.
Right. It's true. And in Portugal, you know, that could mean a week, 2 weeks, this month, you know, it's,
right.
You never know. And you learn very quickly that you just cannot impose your cultural standard on it. And I think that's where some people who either haven't lived in Europe or a foreign country before get caught up when they first move here, and their, you know, their integration is a little bit rougher because they don't understand that. And I feel like because we lived in Italy before, we, even though we didn't know what Portugal was, we knew we could handle what that kind of lifestyle would look like.
Yeah, that must have helped, because coming from California, that's a pretty hard downshift.
Yeah, it is.
Going from a fast-paced life down to Portugal.
It is, but it's beautiful. Sometimes it messes you up because you feel like you're on a permanent vacation here, and you're like, oh, right, I got to work. Like, I got to do.
So you and your husband work from home. Your son goes off to school. Yeah. How about in the evenings? Much of a social life there? Have you made friends with any of the other expats or the locals in the area?
Oh, both. And so the evening during the school week / work week, you know, it's kind of the standard. It's more like home meals with family, you know, just kind of getting through your week. But on the weekends, for sure. And because we work for ourselves, I go into Lisbon once or twice a week to meet up with all of my friends that live over there and have the nice long lunch and whatever. And so it was just so easy because of the Facebook groups to make friends here. We had already made friends before we got here, not only for our son, but for ourselves. So by the time we got here, there was already a community kind of waiting for us. And then we all always joke that Portugal is attracting just the best humans. And so we're all so excited. Our group just keeps growing. There's probably just 50 of us in kind of the community we have, and it's a mixture of local Portuguese people and foreigners.
So, yeah, it's not just Portugal has been attractive for a while now to a lot of other countries. It's not just North Americans that are moving there.
No, if anything, we're one of the smaller immigrant populations. We only clock in around 7,000 immigrants. I'm not sure what the numbers are for Canada or Mexico, but for America or for the United States, it's a little bit under 7,000 immigrants. So we're, I think we rank around 20 to 24 in population for immigrant populations. So really the people we meet and know from outside the country are from all over the place. They're just non-Americans.
You also have a website you maintain, www.everydayportugal.com. And I see that has information not just about Lisbon, but from all around Portugal. It seems like you have people contributing to that from all over. When did you start putting that together?
I started putting that together just this last summer, because what we were seeing in all of the Facebook groups, because I'm probably in 80 of them for Portugal, is that, you know, there's the myth of Portugal, this, you know, this utopic place where it never rains and it's always sunny and you can buy, you know, a house for a dollar. And, you know, there's just the overflowing wine. It's like everything's just so easy. And what was happening is people were starting to get kind of annoyed at this utopic picture, and people wanted to know, what's it really like to live there? And so I wanted to start a website that would just share kind of what I call stories from the streets. It's like people who live here, people with the feet on the ground, and what their experiences, what has been great, what has been challenging, what does life really look like here? So that if you're a family like ours who didn't even get to visit here before moving here, you kind of know what to expect, or the, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So I started that in the summer, because I really wanted to hear, I wanted people to see all the different stories and all the different types of life you could live here in Portugal and what it's really like day to day.
Yeah, it's a good point. Facebook groups tend to be either everything is the best thing in the world or it's the worst thing ever.
Right.
There's not a lot of middle ground in there.
Right. The nuance was missing for sure. And so that's what I think Everyday Portugal can offer people. It's, you know, just a free resource. I'm really not great at updating it as much as I should. There's so much content I need to be adding, but then again, work and life and everything. But I try to add as many stories as possible so that people get a real feel what it's like to live here every day. I don't know if I mentioned this in the article or not, but beyond just saying that the people here are welcoming, but one of the things we thought was the cutest thing about moving here is that within our first 2 weeks of living here, every single Portuguese person we met when they found out we had just moved here had said to us, I just want you to know I'm your first friend in Portugal. Let me be your first friend in Portugal. Call me with anything you need. And this is from like the hotel staff at the place we stayed at when we first arrived before we could get into our apartment, to our landlord, to the guy who runs the grocery store down the street. It was just a sense of welcoming we could not have imagined. And that, and it still rings true today, is when you meet Portuguese people, they are just so welcoming and friendly and helpful in a way we never experienced in America.
Yeah, when I talk to people who have moved to Portugal or even just visited there, that's probably one of the first thing that they mention is how welcoming the people are. The second thing is how safe they felt there.
Yes.
Portugal is rated, I think, the second safest country in the world. And then the third thing, of course, you've touched on briefly, and I wanted to ask you about in a little more detail, and that's the food. Mm-hmm. I talk about absolutely loving the food.
Yes. It's a problem because I literally gained 30 pounds from moving here. So now I've got to rein that back in. But I've been eating, I'm eating all of Lisbon. Like that's what I've been doing. So the food is just incredible here. It's incredibly fresh. The one thing that I think that's kind of cute and funny is that everything is served with potatoes, and it's like potatoes and rice. So you just haven't seen that, or especially coming from California, we're so veggie heavy that it was funny. But there's just such a variety in the cuisine in terms of meat, fish. There's a lot of vegan and vegetarian options in Lisbon specifically. I'm not sure about the rest of the country, but I know in Lisbon. And it's all just so delicious. And then forget about it on the pastries. That's the big problem. Because
yeah, I'd imagine there's a lot of seafood there as Lisbon's right near the coast.
There's so much seafood, but there are also some extraordinary meat and pork dishes. You can just find everything here. And especially in the bigger cities, you find a lot of international cuisine too. So you kind of get the best of it all. You get amazing Portuguese cuisine. And which is so affordable too. We couldn't believe it. We could have these full 3-course meals with wine and coffee and dessert at the end, and it would cost us 10 euro. And we were like, why did we not know about this heaven on earth before?
And that's even in a large city like Lisbon. We're not talking about little villages where the prices are lower.
That's right. That's right. That's in Lisbon, which is really one of the more, it could possibly be the most expensive city in all of Portugal. But you can find lunch specials all day long for 10 euro like that, where you can linger, you can have a delicious lunch and have, you know, your wine or water and your coffee or dessert and then 2 or 3 courses in there for 10 euro. It's extraordinary.
As someone how long have you been living there now? 2 years?
2 years.
About 2 years. Is there any advice that you could give to North Americans, not just Californians, who are considering a move to Portugal?
Yes. I mean, I think the things that we wish we had done before getting here was first to understand all the financial implications of it. Because while moving to Portugal and living here is much more affordable, it might not be more affordable. You know, we're from Indiana. It may not be more affordable than living in Indiana in terms of the house prices and some of the expenses like fuel and utilities. So it's really good to kind of map out the financial piece of moving to Portugal and also what it would look like, especially if you're retiring, what the taxation is on your retirement funds. Because I think some people get over here and then they're pretty surprised at that piece of it. But also just to come, you know, with an open heart and an open mind and realize it is sort of the antithesis to the hustle culture of America. And so while the people are so welcoming and friendly and the pace is really slow, you have to get used to a different type and style of customer service, a different type and style of urgency or timing. And, you know, there's always a lot of Portuguese in these people in these Facebook groups will joke along with us about how, yes, you know, they'll tell you the appointment's at 9, that means they're not showing up till 9:15 or 9:30, but they still expect the foreigner to be there at 9. But I would just advise people to get into these Facebook groups and really ask questions. Don't just like linger and kind of watch what everybody's saying. I mean, that's helpful too. But to get in there and ask your questions, because you'll get a variety of answers that'll really give you a clear picture of what it's like to live here. But my real advice is just do it. You know, if Portugal looks good to you, it's just been a great and welcoming place for us. And it can give you kind of a more peaceful life that you might be looking for.
All right, great. There's some great practical advice from Jen Whitman. We've been chatting about her article in the October 2022 edition of International Living Magazine, New Beginnings and a Slower Family Life in Lisbon. You can get more information about Lisbon from Jen on her Facebook group, California's Moving To /Living in Portugal. And of course, we mentioned the website, www.everydayportugal.com. And you can find her article and other articles that she's written for International Living at internationalliving.com. And members, of course, have access to a wealth of information about Portugal and places or people that you can contact for a little more information that might pertain to your particular needs. So, Jen, I'd like to thank you once again for joining us here on Bigger, Better World, and hope you have a happy and fulfilling and slower life there in Lisbon.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
The Bigger, Better World podcast is a production of International Living. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. If you have an idea for an episode or a question you'd like us to answer, email us at mailbag@internationalliving.com. And don't forget to put podcast in the subject line of your email. That's mailbag@internationalliving.com. We created Bigger, Better World to help showcase the ideas we explore at International Living each month and grow our community of travel lovers, expats, and experts who believe, as we do, that the world is full of opportunity to create a more interesting, more international life. You don't have to be rich or famous to do that. You just need to know the secrets. And that's what we bring you at International Living. If you haven't become a member yet, you can do it today with a special discount offer for podcast listeners. You'll receive our monthly magazine plus a bundle of special extras. You'll find the link in our show notes, or you can go to intliving.com/podcast. That's intliving.com/podcast. Join us next week when we'll be discussing an article from the July 2022 edition of International Living, Kindred Spirits and Understated Luxury in Cotignac, France, with author Tulle Rampont, who traded Southern California for the French Riviera. Until next time, remember, there's a bigger, better world just waiting for you.